Welcome to the CEN show, the voice of the world community. Yes, this evening we have a good one for you. So let me introduce myself. I'm Roski Mascani, host of the CEN show. And tonight we have on the panel with us, we have Professor Amun-Ra, our team members and podcast hosts of Conscious Corner and all around big time educator, Professor Amun-Ra. Then we got Brother Mashinda, who grew up with us in Compton, but now he resides in Louisiana, college administrator, motivational type person that motivates a lot of people to do well and be good. So Brother Mashinda is another one of our team members, and we got to get him to officially get on the website. So this evening, we have our guest, Brother Hood. Brother Hood had did a show on Conscious Corner that went over real well with us. And I want to show everybody that. There's two ways you can access it. So let me show the screen. All right. It was 3 weeks ago that we had Brother Hood on the show Conscious Corner, and here it is. As you can see, the history of the Negro identity and mentality with Professor Amun-Ra and historian Joe Hembrick, and it was a real good show. And I encourage everybody to check it out. And you can also access it, the audio, on the communityeducationnetwork.com website. That's our website. So if you go to the podcast, and for some reason it says we ran into technical issues. Let me refresh and see what happens here. Well, we're going to have to come back to that, but if you go to the podcast section, it should be working in a few minutes here, and you can access all our shows in the audio form, right? Well, let's go back to Brother Hood. Brother Hood is a real good buddy of mine. We taught together for numerous years, and now he's teaching at another campus, and he's an all-around great person. Very articulate. He teaches computers, and also he teaches game design. So this evening, he's going to do this show, this deconstructing. It's going to be a presentation, deconstructing game design development strategies. So I'm not going to further delay you. I'm just going to turn it over to him, and we're going to see what Brother Hood have for us this evening. Brother Hood, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. Good, thanks, Rashiki.
Yeah, so do your thing, brother.
Thank you, brother. All right, greetings this evening. Peace and blessings to everyone on this call and everyone who will catch this later. Let me introduce myself. So I teach AP Computer Science Principles and Game Design 1 and 2. I'm also a early sponsor of Early College Coding Club, contributor. I have a YouTube channel, Business Technology Academy, Hackathon. I'm also certified in PLTW, APCSP, CSA, App Creators, Python 1 and 2, the programming language. Yes, I have a master's and a bachelor's degree. Also credentialed in CSICT. And I'm a researcher, audio production, hobby, blockchain, running, weightlifting. And what I'm here to do is I'm passionate about building strong and empowering problem solvers and explaining and expanding participation in STEM. That's one of the things that I wanted to share with everybody. And yeah, I used to work with Brother Rashiki, and I'm really excited to be able to bring this to you tonight. I'm honored and grateful to all my colleagues, and I really appreciate this time to for you guys to allow me to share. Tonight, we will explore the intersection of gaming and Bartel's taxonomy, which categorizes game players in four different types. So, by understanding the different player types, game developers can create more engaging and satisfying experience for players. We will examine how these player types manifest in different games and how game design can be tailored to appeal to each type. My goal is to raise the awareness and the consciousness level about these new trends in modern games for developers, all users, and parents. But first, let's watch a video so I can give you guys a little bit more background on the topic and that we're going to discuss tonight, and just kind of show you a little bit about what the strategy is and kind of what the topic entails.
Is there a sound to this, Brotherhood?
Yes.
So you got to share the sound with it.
Okay. Well, let's pause real quick. Let me share that right now. There we go. Let's start up real quick. See on the. All right, here we go. So I want to talk about one of the strategies that I used in
We
it.
still can't hear it. When
You can hear it?
no, when you go to the share screen,
The
you
screen.
go to that button. I mean, when you do it, and it's
I
going.
think I'll defend. Hold on. Let me stop share real quick. Hold on. All right, I got it now.
Okay.
So I want to talk about one of the strategies that I use in the teaching game design. So what you see on the screen here, the one sheet is it's an arcade game called Defender. And this is what's called a one sheet. And so what I'm doing is just thinking about games that I used to play growing up. And I remember this game, Defender. It was basically like an arcade game. You take a quarter, and if you were good enough, one game could turn into you literally playing for hours and hours on hand, just standing there playing nonstop because the way they designed the game. So it was really addictive. So one of the things that I wanted to do today being what's today? Tuesday, November 29th, 2022. And mind you, this is my first year teaching game design as a full year course. So I'm really, diving into it, the game design perspective, the curriculum, different curriculums, strategies, dealing with what equipment I have, and just everything. And there's been a plan. So now we're executing the plan. And so I know that a lot of kids now, they have access to, different kind of games. None of these kids really understand what an arcade is. I mean, everything is on their mobile device. So in a way, this is just a different way of introducing the concepts and understanding how design works, how development works, and how some of the same strategies that they do now still matter or mattered when you did the arcade. It's just a different time period, but in terms of getting people interested in a game, something that is engaging, wanting them to come back and play it again, there are certain things that you can do in a game. I mean, that's why so many people are addicted now to video games. So I thought this was a good chance to introduce Defender. I mean, and one thing to think about is this is an arcade. So you're thinking like these games back then, before it was digital, I mean, you're literally making $1 billion in quarters. How do you wrap your head around that, compared to now in the digital era? I mean, it's just different. It's a different thing. So this is the one sheet. And the next thing that I'm going to show is some of the strategies with this project. So you start with a one sheet. Okay. And then the next thing, what you're going to have is your gameplay document. Okay. I'll pull that up real quick. And we've talked about different strategies.
All right, I just want to stop it there. All right. So I'm going to read this story. There was once a young boy named Alex. He was an avid video game player, spent most of his free time playing his favorite game. He was highly skilled and had a deep understanding of the game's mechanics, but he became obsessed with getting a higher ranking than his friends. He spent hours upon hours playing, often neglecting his schoolwork and relationships with friends and family. As he spent more time playing, he began to compare himself to his friends' rankings on the social media. He became fixated on being the best and would often get frustrated and discouraged when he saw that his friends had a higher ranking than him. He started to feel inadequate and like a failure, which led to his feelings of depression and low self-esteem. He started isolating himself from friends and family, and his grades began to suffer. He couldn't find joy in anything else but the game. He even started to lose interest in hobbies that he once loved, like playing sports and reading. His parents became increasingly worried about his behavior. Does this sound familiar to any of you? Now, don't get me wrong. There is no one single cause for video game addiction in children. It's like a combination of factors, like genetic, they say genetic predisposition, brain chemistry, social and environmental factors, characteristics of the games themselves. Some children may be more vulnerable to addiction due to underlying mental health issues like ADHD, depression. Additionally, some games are specifically designed to be highly engaging and addictive, which can make it difficult for children to stop playing the game. And us as people, we play a wide variety of games, from basketball, chess, poker, farming, cooking, every sport known to man. And the owners and the developers must ask is, the question they must ask is, why would somebody be fascinated with these games? I mean, what is the purpose? Is it to make money? Are you planning to entertain yourself or others? The most common accepted answer that we have playing games is to have fun. But what exactly is fun? On the neurological level, video games can be addictive for a variety of reasons. One reason is that they activate the brain's reward system, releasing feel-good chemicals such as dopamine. This creates a sense of pleasure that can leave players wanting to continue playing over and over. So it's a boost of dopamine that helps us enjoy learning as much as we do eating. And thanks to evolution over the years, learning has improved our chances of survival. And if this wasn't the case, then mankind would have become extinct. Learning in games is more different because it's in an environment that you play without consequences. So we tend to learn, improve, and achieve without the real life consequences in the game. So this is because our brains learn through patterns, and this is why games get boring. You know, this is why some games are fun, some are boring, because from the moment we are born, And to the day that we die, our brain is constantly looking for new data to reinforce new to reinforce or learn new ones. Okay, this is the mechanism that we use to learn to exist in the world. And during this time, when we run out of things to learn, we get bored, and that's what happened in the games. But also, players get bored because of the patterns, and that's one of the things I want to talk about tonight: the patterns in the game. So if they get bored if the patterns in the game don't match the player's personal interests. So when the patterns are simple or trivial, they'll get bored. Or when they're difficult and can't be identified. Also, when you're a game designer, you reveal them too slowly or too quickly. Or when a player can find a way to cheat. You can go all over the internet and find ways to cheat. But those are some of the things that developers can identify or do in a game. But when we're talking about fun in a game, they're only fun when you teach players to learn patterns that match their own personal interests without providing them a way to cheat. So if you got a game that has a pattern that has matched someone's special interest, that's when you have something. That's when you can really make a game that's engaging and addictive for a particular user type. And one of those patterns that I want to talk about is calculation of odds, prediction of events, like probabilities, games like backgammon. Rolling the dice. It has many implications in real life, requiring risk and rewards like going to college versus going straight to work. Another pattern, which is called social status. That's another pattern that you can implement in the game, which is happening a lot now. And basically what that is pushing people up and down in value and signaling your own value to others around you. This pattern involves a variety of positive and negative emotions, and arguably the most dangerous and most addictive pattern in this century in video games. Perfect example of this would be Overwatch or any game that has like a competitive ladder going up and down. People get joy from seeing others go down in ranks while elevating their own rank. Another pattern, spatial reasoning, which deals with patterns that require a player to think ahead to determine the possible results of the end of the game, analyzing the moves, figuring out what needs to be done next. That's another pattern. Another one is just dealing with basic memory. These patterns involve recalling, managing complex chains of information, like counting cards or something like that. Another pattern that they look for that you want to, program in your game is just a visceral response. And what does that mean? That's just basically, and you can do this by monitoring the game or you can see people playing it. That's just that occurs when you have a physical reaction to a non-physical experience. Like shooter games falling under this shooter games fall under this category, but think of it as an example of just sitting and watching a game that you really like a league game, and you become so immersed in the game that you have some just crazy response that's considered visceral response. And so these games are tested by testers, and they can see all these different emotions and reactions, and these are some of the things that they look for. Another one is teamwork. Of course, we know this pattern involves just working with others. It's very common in multiplayer games, and it has been used throughout human evolution. So as you see, psychology plays an important part in understanding good game design. When looking to understand user psychology to better design product experience, is one of the richest sources of knowledge exists within the video game world. Game designers have been refining their techniques for decades to build ever engaging and enjoyable experiences that drive player behavior. Their techniques are rooted in an understanding of the player psychology and have built an incredible set of mechanics that they repeatedly leverage over and over again to make these games more and more addictive. And so, beyond simple motivation, game designers recognize that players come to the game with their own personality types and seeking different types of enjoyment. It's important to recognize that this creates experiences that allow each of the player types to thrive in the game. Player types are classically divided into four categories. We will look at these categories later in this presentation. So these are some of the ranking systems that you would see in some of these games. And I'll talk more about this. This is a badge that you would see in some of these games. This is called Clash Royale.
This is an example of a leaderboard that you would see in different games, whether it's a web-based game or some kind of console game. Battle leagues is another way. If you're in a battle league, most of your contributions in the game, everyone is going to be able to see if you join the league. Here's another example of leaderboard working examples. So let's talk about gameplay dynamics and paradigms. So when you're talking about gameplay dynamics, achievements, in short, are representation of special accomplishments. In some cases, they will give you something that helps you progress in the game. In other cases, they're just a great way for you to brag about, to your fellow gamers about what your accomplishments are. But why do people love achievements? How do they drag us further into the virtual experience? Well, we all have these needs in our lives, and as life goes forward, the needs we have become much more complex in nature, and they also become much more difficult to attain. We feel accomplished when we ensure that these needs are taken care of. We feel as if we have achieved something in our lives. So this achievement system is really important. And so what an achievement system is, it just provides you breadcrumbs that basically make you coming back for more and more and more. That's kind of what that means. And so what I want to talk next about, let me go back here. I want to give you an example of the ranking system. I just want to explain it because it is kind of complicated just to understand, but most gamers who play, they get it. But I'm just going to explain to you what happens, okay? And this is common in a very popular game that a lot of schools use, a lot of people play, but you'll get it when I explain it. So basically, we'll call it Nameless Game. The Nameless Game 1, this is how the ranking system works in games. The Nameless Game 1 rank system is fairly straightforward. Before you can play in a ranked competitive playlist, you have to have done one of two things. First, if you own original Nameless Game 1, then you can jump into the competitive straight away. If you did not, and you are starting fresh with Nameless Game 2, then you need to win 50 quick play matches. No, that does not say play 50. You need to win 50 matches. So there are two playlists in rank play, role play, and open queue play. Okay, so it basically locks you into a single role. Support on this mode, teams are strictly locked and have to have one tank character, damage characters. There's all these things. The game has the ranks on you that you might expect, but you start from bronze and then you just kind of move on up. So you see, you don't really get to achieve until you play like multiple games. And so this happens with a lot of these free games. You get in and they'll have a ranking system set up after a certain number of plays. And then all of a sudden you have to get this badge or you pay to play to go forward. And that messes with kids' self-esteem as well. Especially if you're underage, you're not really able to handle some of the pressure with just amongst your peers playing. And so another mechanic I want to talk about is loss aversion, which is another common one in these games, especially when you're dealing with money and have kids paying. It's almost like gambling, creating a gambling situation. So it's called loss aversion. Loss aversion describes how people are intrinsically afraid of losses when they choose between alternatives that can cause risk. So basically, instead of looking at the big picture or the final outcome, they look at each loss as an event, which makes those losses irritate us more. So we dislike losing more than we enjoy winning. Okay. And so that's kind of what happens. So it's and another aspect of that is with the prospect theory. Now there's a mathematical equation to the prospect theory, but I just want to show you a graph of it. What is prospect theory, which is very, very prevalent in some of these games. It's the idea of losing everything has more weight than the potential amount for this particular hand. Okay, so like for example, so we feel losses more keenly than our wins. So $100 loss hurts more than the pleasure of receiving $100 gain. And that's the prospect theory mechanic that in video games. So in the evaluation phase of the decision, people choose what they perceive to be the best option. And this is usually the option with the most utility
which is based on the potential outcome of their probability, the idea of losing everything has more weight. And so that's one of the things that I wanted to mention there. Another one is progression. Okay, this is another mechanic, just being able to display the success as you go through the tasks in the game. You do a little bit, they give you a little more. You do a little bit, you get a little more. Okay, you just continue going on until and everything manifests through the game. So any kind of progress bar that you have in the game is how this often manifests as far as this progression mechanic. Another one is called the collection mechanic. And this enables players to create a collection of items, whether they're achievements, resources, or anything else in the game. They could be badges. Another examples of this are NFTs, money, digital money, tokens, those kinds of things. Skins in the game. A lot of people will play a free game, but then in order to elevate, you pay money to get these different skins that cost more money than the game costs. And that is a big, big issue that's going on right now. A lot of money is being made. A lot of companies are trying to, you know, expand with this. Okay, so another one is blissful productivity. This one is interesting because blissful productivity, I'll just read it and you kind of follow along here. The blissful productivity mechanic takes advantage of the idea that playing a game can make you happier, working harder than you would be relaxing. Essentially, we're optimized as human beings to work hard and doing meaningful and rewarding work. Oftentimes, we are building game experiences. We try to make the things easy as possible to avoid our users having to do work. But what's equally important is enabling experiences that get them in a state of blissful productivity, encouraging them to do work willingly for free. It still amazes me how one example of this would be Wikipedia. Anybody can update Wikipedia, but nobody's getting paid. That's just, you know, so that's an example of blissful productivity and that you can incorporate that in a game, like you're doing something good. Another one is ownership. Basically, like I said earlier, I mentioned NFTs. You own an NFT. This is, you know, this mechanic allows players to control something or have it as their property, which they take pride in having. So controlling parts of a game board, owning an army, like I said, skins, having a large following, digital representation in the game is valuable. That's why a lot of games use Twitch or other platforms to give you that big following. That becomes valuable in the game as well. And so you can get perks on that. So that's why a lot of kids, when they're playing, they want to keep their, when they're playing all the time, they're trying to keep their rank up. And so that's why they can't put it down. Another one is epic meaning. Epic meaning. And this mechanic takes advantage of the idea that players will be highly motivated if they believe that they are working to achieve something great, something awe-inspiring, something bigger than themselves. Okay. So an example of the epic meaning is all over the place, whether it's commercials, not just in games, but it happens a lot, like the Honda commercial. We helped to cut out a tree by a Honda. You know, that's just a commercial aspect. But one of the things they do is they'll have narratives or like a little mini movie in the game. That they'll try to engage you with stories. They'll connect the game to a positive real world cause and try to create empathy. That'll get you sucked into it. A lot of kids, younger kids. Build an exclusive community that creates passionate advocates for your brand. That's why a lot of influencers are getting paid to go into these games and just kind of, you know, try to create that community so people can advocate for it. And also randomize insane rewards to instantly hook users into the game or platform. Okay, like give them free things. Which leads me to the next one, which is called free lunch. Now, that's an old term, but it's basically tying your rewards to free vouchers to create empathy. Like, okay, yeah, you get a free burger and fries here. You play this game. We'll give you a discount on some sneakers or something. So this epic meaning is all over the place, but it really, really goes down in a lot of these games now. And you can program a game to have these epic meanings built in that are really, really serious with getting people hooked unconsciously. And then be able to just keep coming back and just spending more and more and more money and actually hook
It's like a Pavlov's dog thing, conditioning. I want to take just a natural pause here before I talked about children and understanding younger children in gaming. Anybody wanted to chime in on this so far? Yeah.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. Brotherhood, what is the difference between kids being hooked on games and hooked on TV?
The difference? Really, there is no difference other than I think with a game, I think there's a little bit more control with the game because the games are endless. And you can have a game that goes on infinitely. And then you can have a game that's basically what that will lock you in, lock your credit card in, and then a kid can play the game and then before they know it, they're actually spending more. And so versus a TV, they're just kind of watching the programming. It's the same programming, it's conditioning, it's the same. But I think you're locked more in. Their hand is more in your wallet with the game, depending on what kind of game you have and how you set it up. You know what I mean? So it's the same conditioning, definitely. But I think with the game, I think it plays a little bit more on the psychology of the kid or younger person who's not aware because they can play for endless amounts of time. With a TV, it goes off at a certain number of time to go to sleep, but a game you can play all night. And so that's my opinion. I think it's very similar, but just I think games can be a little bit more addicting and they can tailor it. They There is. So, yeah, so there's three types of gameplay. You got people who just play for fun. You have people to play to learn something. And then they play for change. And so, change meaning change from being bored or whatever. But what's happened now is it's become a corporate situation where they're making so much money and using these strategies that it's become basically just a profit-driven thing. And so, what you're finding is the free games, they'll offer you a little bit of entertainment or things to just get you hooked in. And then eventually they're going to drive some kind of profit model in the game to get you hooked. And that is coming from some of these different four strategies.
Let me give an example. Like in
Yeah.
Vegas, they really have games for kids. Interactive. And then we used to have them out here. I don't know if they still do, but they used to have Game World, and then they have what they call arcades, youth arcades, golf and stuff.
Yeah.
Where you these were just weekend things that people went to.
Right.
Now they've fixed it where it's just in your house.
Right.
I mean, arcades and stuff like that. You take your kids out and play miniature golf and play some, games and stuff. 25 cents, 75 cents, sometimes a dollar. And then you go home, and you don't really go back until later, but what I sense now is that they are designing games and machines that parents hook up to the TV or teach the kids how to hook them up. And they become deeply about these games. And they can download them on their phones and bill your credit card, bill your, because you have to put a credit card up in order to get the game. Is that what I'm hearing?
That is correct. That is correct. Definitely. And depending on what game it is, if you have a young kid that's under 7, you could actually be doing a little more damage than you realize it because of some of the games that are ultra engineered to really, get the kids addicted. All the senses, all every so a kid from 0 to 7, that's the theta range. Their brains are still developing, so you're not supposed to give them some of these highly engineered games to get them hooked. They really can't handle it because what's happened is you could be triggering some issues.
Have there been any studies on them games that are violent?
Oh yeah, there is. Yeah, they I think the DSM-5, and I mentioned that in this presentation, the DSM-5, and I'm not a psychologist, by the way. I'm just a educator, but I do have, you know, my wife is in that field, and my sister is in that field as well. But I've been studying a lot of research on, there's something called IGD, Internet Gaming Disorder, that has been recognized.
I what you call it?
It's called IGD, Internet Gaming Disorder, that has been diagnosed as a real
IGD.
disease, IGD. They say that 10% of North America people who North American population have it, and it's considered a disease, IGD. And I think from my research, it's kind of triggered from what kids are exposed to between ages 2 to 7. So you shouldn't really give kids tablets. Go ahead.
Yeah, but also they've got professors that, you can win big money and go into major competition. Is that correct? I mean, some kids.
That's correct. I mean, you can make money in games, you can go to competitions, you can do all of this, but what I'm saying is that if you're somebody who has younger kids, you may need to kind of monitor, really closely monitor what they're playing and understand some of the behavior aspects. And then there are some kids who are mature and have parents, you know, and they're older. They haven't really been exposed their whole life to it, but you just have to recognize. And that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about because, like I said, kids, you know, who are younger, they ain't emerged from the age of from illusion, you know, so it's more difficult for them to learn how to control the frustration and disappointment. But if you're an older kid, yeah, by the time you're in high school, if you've been playing really young, you could have some symptoms of IGD without getting the proper help you need. But there is an avenue to make money in it. But it's not as huge and vast as maybe some, as maybe making your own game or whatnot. But I definitely think that is something to be aware of with some of these games, because a lot of parents just give a kid a tablet and not really aware of what they're being exposed to.
Okay.
And so this is what I'm talking about. I just want to show some more images here. This is just kind of like I just grabbed some images and wanted to share some stuff with the younger students. It's basically a interdisciplinary effort that requires a large range of designers, engineers, writers, composers, and they even use psychologists. That's also part of the development. A lot of these companies making billions of dollars, and they're hiring huge teams that all they're trying to maximize whatever they can get to you know, sell the most games or make the most money. And so that's what's going into it. And so when you talk about gameplay, we mentioned earlier gameplay. It's basically, you know, free without obligation, separate from everyday life and time and space, uncertain with no predetermination, and it's completed by the player's initiative. It's unproductive, governed by rules, which must be followed by the players, make believe. And so what I mentioned earlier, you know, these are the outcomes. The outcomes are learning, development, and fun, you know. And so these are some of the things that go into consider what's considered, I guess you would say, gameplay. But you know, in terms of the model, and this is one thing I wanted to talk about, this is the main model that I wanted to share. This model was done by this guy named Richard Bartle. It's called the Bartle taxonomy. And what it does is it basically says gamers come in four different types of players. Okay. And so these four different types of players are socializers, explorers, achievers, and killers. Okay. That's what they say. So people who like to play shooting games, killing games, those kinds of things. And so there are some mechanics and some things that you can incorporate in these using all four that will really make your game popular, really engaging, and really addictive. And so what you'll see is the most popular games on the market that makes the most money incorporate all four things. And let me show you what that. So here it is right here. So you got socializers or people who love to socialize, interact with other players. And on some occasions, characters, they use the game as a tool to meet others or in the game or outside of the game. There are some people who just love to be on social media. And so they'll play a game just for that. And so the game could be tailored just for that kind of user. Then you got other people who like to explore, like enjoy discovering areas, creating maps, learning about hidden places. They love to take a look around. The metaverse, heavy, heavy with exploring. Achievers, people who like to gain points, levels, equipment. They like to succeed, achieve awards. There are some people who just love to get all the little knickknacks. And then you have people who love competition, which they consider killers. Enjoy competition with players and are there to win against other peers. So these are the four types. And these are the main four that I want to talk about as far as strategies, because these are the things that if you want to have a successful game, these are some of the user types you want to design for. And so this is what happens in these games. And so here's another example of some of the action verbs you can see. As you strategize, you got, if you're an explorer or you're designing some kind of system for an explorer in the game, then you're going to have things in the game where people can rate, curate things, review things, vote. If you're somebody who, likes to achieve, you're going to design, purchase. If you're, a killer, you like to act on players, then you're doing a lot of competition. You're competing. You like to show off. Okay, and then these are some of the strategies and some of the things that that involves this, which is very, very powerful to kids. And if you really, really, in the old days with arcades, they didn't really have the social aspect. You play the game, you go home. Now it's like you play the game, you got these passes, the battle passes, and all these things. You're thinking about when you're not playing. Is your rank going down? And so you got to get back on the game and play. And this is what's happened. It's a vicious cycle. And so the next thing I wanted to share was the demographics. They say about 3 billion people play video games globally, including about 214 million, according to the World Health Organization. Also, 60% of the population are gamers in the United States. Average gamer is about 35. In the U.S., 46% of gamers are female. In 2021, valued at about $180 billion. In the U.S., about 51 million kids play video games. So that's a big, big market with kids that they can turn into basically lifelong customers. And that's there we go with the addiction that I mentioned. And so... And here are some other statistics I wanted to share that I researched and found. Something called the Limelight Networks conducted a worldwide study on video game playing in 2021. And the data showed a significant increase in video game compared from 2020. And so, and I'm sure that, 2021 is due to the COVID impact, but it says people played an average of 8 hours and 27 minutes of video games per week. 44% of respondents played for at least seven days a week. 25% of respondents played video games for at least 12 hours weekly. One third of respondents reported playing video games at least 5 consecutive hours. So there's a lot of, they said binge gaming increased. So there's a lot of, and I surveyed a lot of my own students, and it's a lot, it's a big number. It's definitely a big number. And so why are they addictive? Well, this research is basically attempting to explore why video games are addictive. And one reason is that the video games are designed to entice players to play them. Basically, video games must be challenging enough to keep players playing, but also not challenging, too challenging so the player would give up. Some video games have no final goal or definitive end, which allows people to play them indefinitely. As you see this kid here, he should be asleep. He's in his bed playing all night. And so this type of design can trigger the cycle of addiction in which players continue to seek the immediate gratification of playing the game and earning whatever reward the particular game offers. Now, triggering a cycle, for me, in my opinion, has a more probability of occurring, in my opinion, with if kids are playing the wrong kind of games at a younger age. And that's just my opinion. And so many addictive video games encourage people to connect electronically with each other, which can promote endless gameplay. Some video games operate on a leveling and variable reward systems where people earn skills or rewards by beating certain levels without knowing exactly when it's going to occur. So that's another concept of it. It's just playing and playing and playing and just hoping something's going to drop like a big prize. And so that's what increases the addiction of kids wanting to play over and over again. And so as far as the warning signs, the emotional and physical warning signs of video game addiction would be tiredness, headaches, carpal tunnel syndrome, and lack of personal hygiene. And take a look at this picture here, the one on the left. You see this little baby sitting here holding the video game. And so, you know, and there are a lot of parents that will do that, but depending on the game, it really would be a no-no. You don't want to have a kid just playing some game that an older kid would be playing because of what it could actually do. So more research has been conducted on video game addiction in adolescents than in adults, but studies reported statistics regarding video game addiction in adults. Males have higher rates of video game addiction than females. Single people are more likely to have video game addiction. Unemployment may present a risk factor for video game addiction. Younger adults have more problems with video games playing. There are many types of video games with varying levels of addictiveness. The following statistic represents the U.S. gamers who reported playing at least 20 hours per week of the listed types of video games. So these are the most addictive games on the market right now. You got massively, they're called MMORPGs, which are massively multiplayer online role-playing games. You got multiplayer online battle arenas, massively multiplayer online games. And then you have the regular role-playing games, and then just the regular shooting games. And so this is the disease that I mentioned earlier that is called IGD. And according to the World Health Organization, it is in the ICD-2, the International Statistical Classification of Diseases and Related Health Problems. And it is also in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So it is in there. So these are some of the things to be aware of when you're, you know, designing games. You can trigger that cycle, and as a parent, you want to be aware. And so here's another example of a ranking system that you would see in some of these games, the ones that are highly addictive: Call of Duty, League of Legends, Rocket League. These are just kind of badges that you can see that the kids or people try to strive to get, and these become very, very addictive. The kids are just kind of just trying to just rise up in the ranks. And so, as I explained earlier, this was an explanation of the ranking system. Basically, it's just kind of giving you an overview of how that works. Basically, you know, you play 50 games, or you win 50 games, and then you can kind of get your rank up. And there's a lot of money involved in this. You got working your way up from silver, gold, platinum, diamond, master, and grandmaster. And these are some of the examples of that with the ranking system. And so here are some popular games, online multiplayer games: Fortnite, I'm sure you've heard of that one, League of Legends, World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed. These are very, very popular role-playing games, very competitive, and very addictive. And here are some of my sources. I just wanted to share some of these sources. And so a lot of different texts, a lot of different articles that I've read through the years, just kind of get an idea of some of the factors and some of the things that go into some of these games. You can kind of check this out. I'll go ahead and If you want a copy of the presentation, just shoot me an email. And here are some educational resources. So if you have younger kids, some links that I highly recommend. If you have kids that are under 10, ABC Mouse, Code Spark, PBS Kids, IXL.com, which is a good one that has some really good math enrichment, language arts, social science. And with IXL, it gives you a free 30-day trial. So if you want to assess your kid, and it goes all the way down to first grade all the way up to 12th grade. So you can choose any kind of math level that you want to see where your kid is at. And then the Unreal Engine, this is a free software that a lot of these games I just shared with you are made on, and their gaming engine is free. So if you got the time and you got the equipment, this is a free platform that you can learn how to build AAA level video games. And I would recommend this to grade six to adult. And so I wanted to share that one. This one, Bottle Learning, is a 3D math game for K to six. Really, really good new app that's out there. And also the Leapfrog. I don't know if you've ever heard of Leapfrog, but it's a they sell a lot of good academic tablets and gadgets that have things for kids ages K through six. So I wanted to share that one. And this slide, I wanted to show the specs. So if you are somebody who is looking to maybe get into gaming, but you don't have the equipment, you don't know what kind of equipment to get, and you want to use Unreal Engine, I recommend you get something with at least an iCore processor with i5, at least a 2.5 gigahertz processor. You need at least 16 gigabytes of RAM memory. And I would say at least a terabyte hard drive, SSD, graphics card, at least 2 gigabytes. And I recommend NVIDIA graphics. And this is my contact information. I do have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/lhood, or you can look it up at Mr. L. Hood Business and Technology Academy. You can join my Twitter here at Bus Tech Academy. I do have a website, MrLHood.com, and that's my Cash App. If you share to donate or whatever, that's my Cash App. And so my main focus is educational and informational content in the areas of computer science, game design, software programming, AI, hardware, emerging technology, and history. And so I have a montage here. I'm not going to play it, but I'm going to go ahead and open up the discussion if you want to talk, and maybe show it at the end. And that's what I wanted to share in the presentation. Any questions, anything you want to?
I wanted to make a few comments here.
Yeah.
Real interesting.
Yeah.
I play a lot of dominoes on the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I also do Gardenscapes. And Gardenscapes have many, many levels. That's right. One of those games I would say that I'm at that progression stage, because mm-hmm. it just keeps going. It's endless, and it's a good game. It kind of works. I play these two games on the phone, and I think it's good for my, keeping my brain sharp, especially with the dominoes strategies and the strategies with the Gardenscape. It's a Connect 3 game, so it's pretty interesting. And then what else did I have? I had something else, but you can come back to me. Brother Mashinda?
No major questions. I appreciate the presentation. Very interesting. Appreciate the research and the resources that you shared. And, it was a lot. You gave a lot tonight. And, it's definitely more than something to think about, the way, you said it sounds like it's very intentional. It's marketing at its best, reminds me of, like, you know, I tell people, like, when you're checking out at the grocery store and they have all the candy and the chips there right at checkout, you know, and the different colors of the color schemes of the product on the packaging and things like that, the psychology, you know. So it's like it's man, it's more, it's pretty deep, you know, and to know that, to hear that it's like a drug being created and being dispensed. And Brotherhood, so what do you think about the, you know, the impact of the metaverse, you know, as it relates to, I'm sure there's a lot of coding involved in designs, different things that go into creating characters and avatars and what have you. But what do you, you know, and like you say, I understand you're not a psychiatrist or anything, but what's your take on that as far as the, you know, what you just shared is alarming, you know, as far as the, you know, kids that can become addicted. What's your thought on the metaverse?
I think the metaverse is basically just opening up more, it's just expanding more avenues for students or people, or just in general. And I know I'm speaking students, but I mean in general, for people to become addicted if they don't have, a wherewithal with themselves. Because with this younger generation, a lot of them are playing these games unsupervised. And so if they're playing the wrong game unsupervised too much, this is just going to be just locking them in. I mean, because the metaverse, like if you're someone who likes to explore and you love socializing, the metaverse is an ideal place. So they're going to make so much, there's going to be so much money being made in the metaverse. And then you can add all these add-ins, and then you can just create an immersive experience that is going to lock people in. And so it's definitely alarming, but I think people are going to be caught up just the same way. It's just going to be more immersive, but yeah, it's definitely going to just trigger a whole nother era of gaming. It's already happening. There's some games that are coming on board that can do so much. I mean, you have metaverse, you can make a metaverse of anything. Like if you want to have a club, people come to, you can create your own metaverse of your club. And people can digitally come in, meet people, So all they're gonna do is take advantage of it. They're just creating a playground for them to take more advantage of it. And so I think that as more people come online, people need to be aware, and maybe, the younger generation needs to be aware of what could happen and maybe create those environments that are maybe more safe spaces, for some of this stuff. Because if you are somebody who has some little bit of ADHD or some kind of spectrum, you're really going to be more susceptible to addiction, and that's what a lot of the data has shown as well. So I think it's definitely something that they need to have some kind of controls in place, like quality control, you know what I mean? Some kind of way. Because the rating systems that they have on these games, it's outdated. You can't really supervise all of these games that are coming out and knowing really, really what the level is to be aware of. But if you just focus in on, if you want to have your kid in the metaverse, you need to understand what kind of platform is it? Is it for adults or is it for kids? Or does it have, is it requiring you to lock in a credit card? Because that's really what they do. They try to get you, they give you something free. And then for you to continue, just put your credit card in. And then eventually hook you to where you're going to be doing so much that you're going to feel that you need to exist in it and have it. And that's, it's almost like a heroin addiction, because the dopamine is so, it's so vast and so serious, you know what I mean? But that's what I had to say on Metaverse. It's definitely going to be something to pay attention to. It's going to create a new generation of people who are caught up, I think.
I don't think.
When you say metaverse, what is that about?
The metaverse is just basically a virtual space
Is that that
where
thing
you
with the
create.
glass?
Yeah, you can put it on a mat. Well, it's just basically a virtual environment. You can do it with a mask, or you can just do it like we're here on a computer. You can go to a website, log into the metaverse, and just roam around, just like you would in a video game, but you're actually meeting certain people. or doing certain things, going in certain rooms, watching video. Maybe you can go to the metaverse and watch a concert from an artist.
What about this game that these big masks and it costs $400 or $500?
Yeah. Yeah, that's those are Oculus.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of kids are using that. I don't think that really has hit the market as fast as they probably thought it would, but it's definitely kids are using that. And that's just causing a more immersive experience in it. And so if you're have one of those masks on and you're in the metaverse, you're just going to feel like you're actually there because of the way the experience is. You're literally going to feel like you're there.
You know, then, you know, since they went to virtual.
Yeah.
And many people want giving kids computers.
Right.
And everything's on a computer now.
Yes, it is.
Applying for jobs, banking, you know, Amazon, blah, blah, people don't shop, even, you know, you have to, you know, I mean, it's hard to get around the computer utilization. Kids learn from what they watch and hear adults do. And if you as a parent is into games, you know, with your friends, I mean, because it's not just kids playing. Like you said, you just, so I'm coming up in an environment and I see my daddy's a mama boyfriend playing or mama girlfriend and they playing. And, you know, you get sort of sucked in.
Yeah.
And my point is that, you know, this is a very important dynamic. Then people say there's a profession in computer design game.
And, yes.
You know, from the standpoint of you can come up with a game, you know, you can make money if you can sell it. Get mass production and it's ratified. What role does the lights and the sounds play in the games?
Oh man, it's hitting all those senses. Those lights and sounds, I mean, that's going to get you hooked. It's going to hit all those senses. And so if you're somebody who's developing a game and you want to target, you know, teenagers, for instance, you have the right color scheme. You have the right sound audio, the sound frequencies. What is the popular song? What are the popular artists? You get all that together and you do your homework and you put that in there and you execute these levels a certain kind of way. Kids are going to love it and they're going to be, and you promote it a certain way. That's how you target. That's how you target your audience and that's how you capture your audience. And so it becomes a point to where it becomes so lucrative that you just keep riding that train, you know what I mean? And so you put all the best engineers or audio production in it. You put all the things that are going to captivate them. And so it's heavily sound plays a huge part in it, and audio, all the sound effects to make you feel like you're there. Like say, for instance, you got a game where you're outside. Well, if you're outside, you're going to have sound effects, like birds chirping, you know, cars going by. Water, you know what I mean? And so if you want to create a scene, they have something called cinematics, where literally you kids have played a level in the game and then you want to evoke a certain emotion. Well, you play a little video that's going to invoke some type of emotion to draw them in even more, and then you go to the next level, and then that's just, it's just captivating them as they played it for a little bit. And then each level you have more video and scenery and audio and content that's just getting them more and more hypnotized into this game. And so that's what's happening. That's why games are, some of them are just like cartoons, but really, really realistic looking. And so.
The other question is, there's no regulation, federal, like.
There is. I mean, you have, you know, those parental guidance warnings on them. I mean, you have, you know, all these, you know, rated PG-13 or adult or in it. You know, they have.
I'm not talking about regulation for the people buying them and playing them. Regulation for the people making them.
I don't really see much of that. I don't really see much of that. I mean, right now, I think Microsoft is trying to start a monopoly. They're trying to buy up all the companies. Like, they're trying to buy Activision, Blizzard, and they're trying to have a monopoly. So there's really no checks and balances on that. And that's why I think it's really important for people to be aware of. I mean, like, for instance, when I was doing some research just a few weeks ago, I wanted to see which games were making the most money that were free. And I ran into an article that said that this game called Clash of Clans, they had this, they introduced something called a battle pass several few years ago. And the battle pass allowed them to increase their profits 145% from 1 year to the next just by introducing a battle pass. And so basically what that did is it just
What's a battle
skyrocketed.
pass?
So a
What's
battle pass is basically is you buy a you pay us some money, and then they give you a basically a reward to have you play and give you certain levels. You battle certain people, and you earn things by battling different people. And then as you earn, you get a badge. And then you buy, and then you play. So it just helps you move up the ranking system, like the ranking system I shared earlier. So it helps you to move up the ranks. But in order to move up the ranks, you got to pay a little bit and just keep paying to move up the ranks. And you got to keep playing too. And so if you don't play, you can drop down. And so that's how they get you hooked in. So they made 145% increase in profits just by introducing that one little feature in their game. And it's basically like called an achievement system. You create some kind of achievement in your game. And then depending on how you do it, it's just causing people to just keep coming back more and more and more. And it's really, really highly addictive. And then throw in the social media aspect, it's really, really dangerous. You know, because we have kids who are just, they're all they care about is that peer pressure, how they look amongst their peers, right? Especially nowadays. And so as these games, you know, become more popular, these are some of the things that kids are dealing with, because not just being bullied in school, but bullying because they're not good at this particular game. And they're all on the same kind of virtual social group. And so that's the part I wanted to share. But yeah, that's what I had on that. Any other questions? I'm definitely here to answer them. And I would definitely, Ross Key, you can definitely put this presentation on the video when you publish it in the comments. So anybody want to come back and check it out, that's fine too. But yeah, I'm really appreciate being able to share this content, and it's quite a bit. And hopefully anybody who is
I got
playing,
a question. Is there a treatment for IGD?
say that one more time. I couldn't hear
Is
you.
there a treatment? I mean, do you just
A treatment for,
cut the thing off?
well, as
IGD.
a, well, as a, for IGD, I think you need to get some professional help, professional counsel, just like you would do any other addiction. You would definitely see a therapist or a counselor or some kind of psychologist.
They got alcohol, cocaine anonymous,
Yeah.
alcohol. Do they have IGD anonymous? I mean,
I'm not. I'm not really. I don't think I've heard of anything like called an IGD Anonymous, but I'm sure there may be some kind of agencies out there as this kind of gets more and more popular or becomes more of a phenomenon. But I'm sure there's some places like that. I'm not exactly sure where, but I'm sure there is. Yes.
you think that there should be classes in the school to talk about IGDs and gaming, the harmful effects of gaming, and also how to manage it?
I do. I do. I think that's missing. I think that's missing right now because everybody's just happy playing them, and everybody's thinking like these games are just like they were 20, 30 years ago. They're not. It's not just for fun and entertainment. They're trying to captivate the audience and have a lifetime customer. So, and when you're off of it, it can play on your psyche because you want to, you know, grow in the game. So I really think that this would be an area to expand in education, definitely.
Yes, sir. Excellent information, and people should view this and get this information, and that's a good thing that you're doing here, Brotherhood. Keep up the good work, and Brother Mashinda, anything else? Brother Mashinda, anything else? Okay, Professor Ron, no more questions.
No, I'm good. I really enjoyed this, and I'm going to incorporate it in some of my lectures to
Okay.
parenting class.
Appreciate it, brother.
And firm to your presentation on the video, as well as just putting their coat to the addiction aspect for youth, even adults themselves, you
Yeah.
know. We get hooked on a lot of things. This is the most addictive society because so much responsibility comes with freedom, you
Yeah.
know. And, you know, I mean, look at the people killing themselves on fentanyl, you know.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing. And here you are deadening your mind on games that you think are competitive to the point in which you lose your sense of reality around you and just emerge into the game. That's the only thing means something to you. You're eating, you're playing. You're just playing all day, all night, like you say, hiding up under the cover,
Yeah.
doing it's just rough. Okay. I'm good, Rafiki.
All right. So, Professor Rod, were we able to lock down those guests?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I'll get those names from you.
All right.
Next week, I have my granddaughter coming on. I have my ne grandson, Ras Kassim Askani, on. And,
Okay.
his older sister is coming on. She's in the sixth grade, so I'm gonna interview her.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so that should be interesting. And then, yeah, Professor Ra has a real good panel discussion coming on Monday. So,
Thank
Brotherhood, I appreciate you, man, and
Thanks
we
for having me.
looking forward to having you back, man, when you can come back.
Okay. Okay,
Yes,
definitely,
sir.
man. I'll cook something up and I'll be in touch, man.
All right. Well, all right, everybody. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. We're gonna catch you guys next time.
All
Take
right.
care now.
Take care.
We on tomorrow night, right? For the book?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.